Good morning, everyone, and thank you so much for being present at this meeting. And thank you so much to the two presenters, Mr. Igor Marzo, Carlos Luis Cañete, and thank you so much for your availability to share with us your experience. In today's meeting, they shall be talking about the optimization of distressed loan portfolios and keys to design and operate a bad bank. As you all know, under these severe critical circumstances, these distressed loan portfolios grow, importantly so. Hence, it's a challenge on how to maximize the recovery of these loans. There are different ways of doing so. In other words, to create structures which are common for management purposes. And what they will be addressing is precisely based on the broad experience they have on these topics, which are the existing alternatives and specifically what's convenient, what's not convenient when they have to operate a bad bank. With no further ado, let me give the floor to Mr. Igor and Carlos. And thereafter, we will have some time for questions through the chat and they shall be answering. Thank you so much. Good morning, Pascual, and thank you. I wish to thank before starting once again, ASBA. Thank you. They are Latin American supervisors, and especially to all of you for this kind invitation to be able to participate as speakers and to present our experience in such a very important matter. We partners of IGER. It's a Mexican company which works specifically on solving these circumstances with financial institutions and other corporations. Well, we have the experience as a first person with these bad banks. I have to apologize, first of all, if unfortunately you can listen planes flying by because I'm at the airport. I'm going to try and be as clear as possible. First of all, let's talk about a bad bank. And for this purpose, we have structured our speech. We will have a Q&A session thereafter. It's been divided into five very different chapters. The first one has to do on how do we understand that in a severe crisis like the one we're going through, the non-performing loans or problematic credits shoot up and become out of control, in spite of the fact that the banks, you know, have a series of controls that under normal circumstances work very well. Thereafter, we shall try to understand the structures to manage distressed assets. Why certain situations are easier to implement? Well, of course, it depends on the countries and the financial circumstances of that country. And finally, we shall see why good banks, normal banks, are not able to maximize the distressed collection of these problems. And, you know, it's part of what we shall be addressing. And finally, we're going to see key issues to design and operate a bad bank in its different modalities. And in ending, we shall use our history. We shall talk about the first bad bank that we saw. It's a bank in the United States back in 1986. And which were the lessons learned? Which are very current, by the way. I say they're current because although on many occasions we have to refresh things because back in 2009 with the Irish Public Bank and in 2012 with the public Spanish Bank, many of these issues were forgotten. So these public banks, we shall see how they originated. They were quite similar, but they have been quite different in the way of executing things. And of course, this has given way to very different results in both cases. So we shall try to learn what worked and what stopped working in these banks. With no further ado, let's now talk and address one of the first chapters. Now, here we shall try to understand that under normal conditions, depending on the situation of the countries, some mortgage loans, let's give you examples of mortgage loans which are the most stable ones. We shall not talk of, you know, credit cards. No, we're going to talk about mortgage loans. Now, in countries under normal circumstances, a 2-3% of non-payment rates is quite normal in financial institutions. And also under these situations, the recovery rates are more or less between a 75% to a 95%. However, in deep crisis with COVID, you know, guarantees have to be properly constituted, and the mortgage market, the interpreter apologizes, we cannot hear properly. However, in a deep crisis as COVID-19, we can expect a significant impact. Carlos, we apologize. We cannot hear you properly, sir. Yes, sir. Let me continue, sir. And let's see if we can hear you a little bit better later on. Well, of course. Now, as Carlos was saying, I apologize. I believe you can hear me better. Well, the loan to values are conditioned when the loan is given. So of course, under normal circumstances where there is no crisis, loan to value are more or less a 70-85%. And of course, we are in an environment that there are sufficient guarantees to recover the loan on behalf of the banks. That is why the recovery rates between a 75% to a 95% that we were remarking upon under a crisis situation like the one we're facing through COVID-19, well, we see a demand that contaminates the financial institutions. And of course, this ends up in the real estate market. Hence, this becomes a vicious circle. What happens on the one hand side, customers have liquidity issues to pay out their loans, and collateral, their value, which was the original value, well, of course, is being questioned because the real estate market collapses very quickly, and it's very difficult to be able to liquidate those guarantees. And if we wish them to be liquid immediately, well, it's against big impact discounts, and that's the impact. And this is why those processes are produced in such an accelerated fashion. Now, the problems that generate these types of crises, there's a first step that sometimes we forget because, you know, we focus on the non-performing loans, NPLs by its acronym in English. But what happens and what we're seeing at present and what we're seeing clearly addressing and talking to different financial institutions, there's a scarcity of good loans. Why? Because this crisis produces much pressure in the ratings of the companies. The internal ratings of the banks have to carry out an adjustment, ratings go down, and many of the clients become non-investment grade. And of course, it's very difficult to convey new operations because in terms of internal profitability, each bank has their own system. And we have to calculate the profitability on the equity so they don't obtain that profitability. So of course, loans are stopped, the good ones. And this of course makes much added pressure concerning the results of the bank. Now concerning the second level, the NPLs shoot up and are distressed. And this of course creates distress in the bank portfolio. And there's a third component. And of course there's feedback amongst them. In other words, complexity concerning management of these NPLs and the bad banks increases exponentially. And through today's webinar, of course, we're gonna see this, which are the complexity levels and new activities have an implication concerning the management of these loans and of course of the bad bank. So this requires specialized human resources, with people that have the necessary technical knowledge concerning NPLs and the development of IT systems, because the bank systems were designed to manage loans, but not designed for real estate assets, which will end up being part of the balance of the banks. And these are processes that require much time and complexity, as I said. Now, from the point of view of structures, there are four models or structures with which you can manage these types of NPLs. And the first factor is to determine if we wish, from the bank's point of view, we're going to talk throughout this webinar, and for it to be simple for everyone, we're going to talk about a good bank, which means a traditional bank under normal circumstances, and a bad bank, which manages NPLs. In other words, for all of us to be able to follow the same terms throughout my talk. So from the point of view of a good bank, it has to determine if these NPLs, if they wish them to be part of their balance sheet or to leave. So that's one of the pillars that we see on the chart. And the other is, how will it be managed? Will it be managed as a bank? And will it be a specific area of that bad bank? Or will it be a stipulated situation that, for example, it doesn't request a specific banking aspect? And now, beginning on the right-hand side, the first solution, which is the most simplest and the easiest to implement, quicker, and the one that's mostly used, is, okay, let's create an internal group. And this is what the banks are doing at present. We've talked about with entities in Mexico, Colombia, and Peru, and throughout the region. Well, all the banks at present are creating these teams of people. And thereafter, we're going to see the solutions that are being taken. They're assigning assistant teams for loans and home office, and others are rescuing the old guard, which are employees from the bank that went through prior crises in the period of 2008, or, for example, at the start of 2000, they have much experience concerning crisis management, and the others, basically, they have to create new teams, and they're searching to hire external experienced people that have these capabilities. Now, the solution of an internal team of individuals, of course, is the first step that's usually taken, but it's not necessarily, have to be the last one. It can evolve, and each bank, of course, can make the decisions they wish. It doesn't allow a lack of consolidation of the assets, and that's still considered in the good bank. And that, of course, has to do with the reports of capital markets. And they're sent to a specific unit within the bank, and they allot a different team. Now, the problem concerning these internal units is the clear separation of liability. Usually, these are RBs that, for example, there has to be a clear separation of liabilities. It's clear and important for success or failure, of course, of a bad bank, because if not, managing is mixed, and the type of mindset of managing a good or bad bank is completely different. And going on and looking at the option of a guarantee within the balance sheet, well, these are the solutions that we usually carry out when then there is a rescue plan on behalf of a government entity or of the central bank of each country. Or, for example, in the case of the EU, it could even be the EU central bank that provides a guarantee to entities to be able to obtain the loss that might generate a series of identified assets. Now, this solution, in other words, assets are still part of the balance sheet, but the market share is because there is a new guarantor of a high quality. Well, it'll have a serious impact concerning the balance sheet of the bank. And of course, they have a good component of structural complexity in its implementation. And it's a necessary condition, therefore, to have support from a government entity, a sound one, which has the goodwill of rescuing the financial system. So this solution, of course, is seen every so often, and it depends much on the wish or the intention of the state entity to rescue the financial institutions. And continuing with an off-balance sheet and a structured solution, we might create a vehicle, which might be a special purpose entity or vehicle. Basically, it's a society that's constituted in which the good bank usually has a percentage of equity, but it doesn't have control. If not, it wouldn't have this lack of consolidation. So it needs to search external partners that will help out in this vehicle, and on many occasions they contribute with management. And the types of assets that need to be transferred to this vehicle, they have to be homogeneous to mix corporate assets, consumption credits, credit cards, with mortgage loans. And the most typical, we've seen it with structures in which you transfer the mortgage loan portfolios with an amount, of course, which is the simplest thing to do. And this vehicle, of course, can have its own rating, and the fact of unconsolidating it from the good bank, well, that contagion risk and of transmitting the vision that the market has concerning the financial statement of the good bank is eliminated. And lastly, this is in a darker color. I believe that this is the topic for today. It's basically the constitution and segregation of a bad bank. In other words, the bad bank spinoff. Now, this structure is definitely more complex from a structural standpoint. It requires capitalization on behalf of the vehicle. We need investors which contribute with equity and liquidity. And it's definitely more complex from an implementation standpoint because it demands the creation of a new institution with a specific bank with a laboratory to create its teams and systems and so on and so forth. And the main advantage, it allows a complete separation of the good bank and thereafter a commercialization of this vehicle with all the assets that it contains. Hence, generally speaking, it's the most complete solution, but not necessarily the most simple one. This is why we were saying that the natural process is to begin with an internal restructuring unit and evolving towards a special CPE to be able to carry out this lack of consolidation or division from the or spin-off of the bad bank. And the option of a guarantee is definitely more exceptional, and it depends on the support of the administration or government with this rescue plan. Now, we have basically introduced the concepts of what happens in a critical environment, a severe one like under COVID-19, which are the vehicles that can be implemented to manage these assets. But it's important to understand why good banks, or why is it good banks for them, or how they're designed to operate. It's difficult for them, hence, to be able to maximize these NPLs. Now, on this first chart, what we see in a simple and clear manner is the operations of a bank to be able to provide loans under normal circumstances. On the one hand side, and here you can see this triangle, we see the borrower, we see the loan, which establishes the relationship between the bank and the borrower, and we see collateral. This is the typical outlay in which we are providing a loan with a mortgage guarantee. Now, the processes are quite simple. We have an administration process of the loan, we have a collection process, and we have a reporting one. In other words, we generate updated reports for the loan purpose. Now, on behalf of the borrower, we have the origination, application, and presentation of the loan, and the collateral, which is the guarantee of the loan, we invite to see which is the appraisal when we were talking of loan to value to determine the value so as to accommodate the loan based on the value for that specific loan. Hence, from from a business standpoint, it's a simple business with low volatility, hence it's predictable. It generates economies of scale. And when this takes place, it's an efficient model where, of course, the origination costs and the high margins and low origination costs for the lenders are attractive. And there's a last item, and sometimes we lose focus, that the good bank is a business that is permanent. Any employee in a bank has no doubt that next year the bank will continue existing and it'll continue providing loans. So, you know, that permanent business makes the structures that are created with the mechanisms and, for example, what the employees earn are there. So the structure is simple. It's all the formulae we all know of providing a bonus based on compliance and underwriting or revenues and so on and so forth. So it's perfectly aligned talking about the interests of the staff in the bank. There isn't much of a difference. However, when we are in an environment concerning NPLs, this changes completely. As you can see on this chart, definitely things are more complex. And if you allow me, let me go back because I believe we cannot see in one single slide, but here, this is a relatively simple under normal circumstances. And when we're talking of NPLs, well, things change completely and there is definitely more complexity. More complexity, these are additional boxes. Down below, we have included these boxes with legal concept, which goes from the legal concept with the relationship with the borrower, bankruptcy, insolvency processes, legal restructuring of the contracts where the borrower is implied and you would see the contract. And even under extreme circumstances, if you participated, for example, in the prior webinar and we spoke about the options for restructuring purposes, one was the execution and this is the legal foreclosure of collateral. Now, from the point of view of the borrower, much work needs to be done. The bank, the good bank, and knew the borrower, they knew who they were, they loaned, and an analysis took place, but it was a more static analysis where we are facing NPLs and our borrower says they have difficulties to pay or they won't be able to pay. Well, an alarm activates, so thereafter we begin with a more exhaustive process, in other words, to obtain intelligence and investigation of that real borrower to know if they're hiding assets or what they're doing. And of course, the gathering of information. So if we opt for refunding the loan, well, there has to be a refinancing, of course. It's this chart or a little box on the upper left-hand side. This implies a financial analysis to understand if that restructuring plan will make sense and if it's sustainable. And from the point of view of the collateral, well, before we had focused solely on the taxation of the asset, and the mentality or mindset of the bank changes completely because the asset is susceptible of being transferred to the balance sheet of the bank via legal execution or unpayment or legal foreclosure. So what this implies is that from a management standpoint of the real estate asset, there's an issue that will handle advisory, property management of the development of the real estate investments. And we might even decide that the best is to freeze the assets. So as it says here, it's the complexity. There are many more processes and one of them, and some of them are definitely in greater detail and demand a level of knowledge on behalf of the managing teams, which is very specific. And in many cases, different to those teams that were providing loans under a good bank environment. So as you know, it's a tough environment, unpredictable, high level of complexity. It requires course or new skills. It's a business that has no vocation for permanency. As a matter of fact, all the managers of these banks, they wish it to last as less as possible. It means that the crisis is over and it's a recovery environment. And this creates additional issues that we'll see later on, which means it generates issues to align the interests of the board of directors with the project. So what is a good bank and what is a bad bank? And here we have generated a list which is not exhaustive, but we believe will allow us because we compare both businesses, why the needs are so different. Now, the good bank is managed through the market. It's the market that pushes things. It's a competitive market where banks compete to have the best customers and to provide the best loans. Hence, it's a very competitive market where the price in which operations takes place, it's a very sensitive element. It's resilient. If the price goes up, probably you're going to be less competitive, less operations, therefore. And it's focused on satisfying the needs of the customers. All bankers, they always say that they're a good relationship bank with the customers to continue carrying out business in the future. However, in an environment of a bad bank, it's completely different. The market is no longer conditioning you. It's the crises that conditions. It's not non-competitive. No bank wishes to compete for bad banks. As a matter of fact, they wish to do it away and as quicker as possible from their balance sheet. And this allows to be able to revisit the prices, because if it's a non-permanent and non-recurrent business that you don't wish to hold, well, you can start thinking if you're going to optimize the price for these types of loans, because not all loans are NPLs. Sometimes they have face issues that the customer can continue paying. You can revisit the cost, and it's focused on the recovery, collection, and the debtor or borrower stops being the focus in a positive sense. As a matter of fact, they also might be adversarial. So we go from a consensual to a non-consensual, where sometimes you persecute the borrower as an obstacle for those loans to be paid. And we talked about this. The good bank is a permanent business. The bad bank is a one-time one. It's exceptional. And thereafter, there is a reputation issue. A good bank, what it can not allow itself is to have a bad reputation in the market, be aggressive, market with marketing campaigns. It wishes to have an image of a good institution that helps out its customers. And a bad bank environment, and this is why it's very important to segregate and for the name of the bank to be completely different and to see no easy relationship to link between one bank and the other. Of course, as a matter of fact, if you have a tough reputation in the market, you recover more rather being a bad bank, you're the nice bank, but that won't work. And it's not aligned with what that bank needs. And at a team level, and this is much related to what we were saying before, when there's a permanence, a willingness, when people work for a good bank, well, they say, hey, I have a professional career. It's going to last 15, 20 years. And the training is guided towards activities which will have a long duration through time. And of course, that's attractive to capture new talent. However, in a bad bank, what you're offering to your staff, well, this is going to be a harsh environment, much, much tension, long hours of work. You need high level of knowledge, great skill. And in 3 years' time, probably we won't need you any longer. So you're going to have to change the focus of how you retain those employees, because those employees need to be experimented individuals that contribute with value. And we're going to see the examples of the Mellon Bank, how a management with a high capability might be within the success standpoint. Now, from the traditional or good bank point of view, which are the main hurdles to be able to achieve those goals, recovery goals? Because the good bank, what it's thinking about, how should I avoid losses and how can I preserve my capital? But its starting point, and that's important to understand, is much conditioned. First of all, it's conditioned because of the valuations of assets and loans in their balance sheets, because these valuations, not that they weren't realistic, but under a crisis circumstances, they're not current. They have to be revisited. And if we're talking of non-realistic valuations, and we shall see this in the Irish bad bank and the bad Spanish bank, well, that has definitely a condition with the execution and the results obtained. Now, distressed debt fatigue, I know it sounds like a disease, a chronic disease, but truly good banks, it's difficult to manage these assets. Now, on the one hand side, internally within the bank, it generates tension, and it also generates image issues with the public. Sometimes we see politicians, populist ones, say, hey, the banks are evil because they're executing the mortgages. Of course, they don't wish to do so to any individual, but sometimes they're obliged to try and recover their loans. If they don't do so, well, those loans are not liquid, they lose solvency, and hence they maybe disappear and causes even a greater evil. Now, a third factor which makes things difficult concerning recovery is communication with debtors. Now, debtors, we have to continue talking with them. That's very important to continue having an open communication channel and to be patient, because generally speaking, you know, debtors are not evil. There's no debtor, with the exception of certain cases that wish to deceive the bank. What's happening is that, you know, they're facing a deep crisis, and even their business or their lifestyle might be in danger of disappearing. Hence that communication channel, we have to try to keep it open to try and obtain during those negotiations the best solutions. And sometimes the banks fail. They go from being extremely friendly to extremely hostile. We have to reach a mid-term situation. Fourth factor, how can you manage concerning the importance of NPL banks? What are they doing? They withstand 6 months, 2 years withstanding those NPLs until they can't any longer. And they're desperate selling them, and they sell them at a very low price. And there are other entities which in a more structured manner generate portfolios, and they begin selling them at the start, shyly so, then more aggressive. So therefore the focus on one and the other has an impact in the recovery levels and perception of the market. And of course that's related with the bank's philosophy, which is the time horizon, which is strategic, and which is the credit culture. Because if you have a lax credit culture and you have been very aggressive concerning loans, well, you're going to face many issues. And generally, it's better to find the proper balance. In other words, banks which have not been extremely conservative, but definitely more prudent, they manage better these situations. And then the last two factors. First of all, we have to provide resources to this activity, although it's an activity that is not permanent, but it requires quality resources. And how are we to align the interests of the team? Because the interests of the team with the banks, well, they have to be aligned in recovery levels, schedules, reducing processes. And for that purpose, we shall see further on that we need to generate a business plan so as to be able to do so. And lastly, in conclusion, with regards to the introduction of the concept of bad bank and the keys for management purposes, now, which are the keys for success and objectives? And they're somewhat intertwined. Now, success keys for a bad bank is, first of all, a clear separation concerning the good bank. If you don't achieve that separation and you're in a gray scale, well, everything's going to be quite difficult to manage. And you will not know who's liable of success or failures concerning the management of that bad bank. And the second factor to measure success is how deficient they are in concerning solutions or efficiency concerning NPLs. So all this investment has to be taken into account if the bad bank will be better than the good bank. If we don't generate efficiencies, well, we are going to remain as we are. We will look in towards the internal unit and we shall be able to save headaches. So concerning our goals, when we talk about the transfer of risks, what you also achieve is to clean up the balance sheet of the good bank, and that helps to recover or restore confidence in the market or at that institution, because you already know the volume of NPLs and where they're found. And that helps much to restore trust from investors and borrowers. And you avoid the contagion risk of the good bank, because in the end, these assets, it's not that it's a disease that goes from one loan to the other, and that's why the balance will be transmitted, but it ends up creating an internal dynamic, a negative one within the institution. And on occasions, the good bank focuses much on the management of its assets, and it doesn't take care of its traditional business or the business where it needs to focus. And, you know, it needs to be avoided as much as possible. And lastly, what we were saying before concerning key issues, in other words, to set a clear responsibility. We have spoken about or set the responsibilities and objectives of the bad bank. And the next step would be to say which are the assets that will be transferred to the bad bank. Now, a very simple chart that we shall address how it needs to be done and the frequency. In this axis, we have assets, performing assets and non-performing assets. And on the right hands, we have strategic ones for the bank. They're properly aligned with their business plan and long-term goals and non-strategic objectives. Now, the first box down below, white one, it's clear that we all agree that these are key assets of the bank. We have to preserve them because it's your core business. Without this business, well, the bank will lose sense. But thereafter, we go towards the gray boxes. If we go towards strategic loans, which are non-performing, well, the first recommendation is for the bank to restructure it, to do as much as possible for that loan or these assets in this category to go again towards the strategic assets. So the first thing would be restructuring if it makes sense. And we spoke in the other webinar, which are the criteria for restructuring purposes and for them to be sustainable, but that would be the first goal. And if you can't achieve it, then what the bank needs to think about is to sell them to the bad bank or to try and sell them in the market. But that would be like the last option. Now, the other gray box on the right-hand side down below, here you generate more doubts. These are assets which are performing, but they're non-strategic for the bank. In other words, throughout time, banks end up accumulating assets, which maybe are not perfectly aligned with their long-term strategy. So they create doubts. Hey, I'm under critical circumstances. My assets are performing. What do I do with them? There is an option. Okay, I'll remain with them. I won't do anything. I continue maintaining them in my balance sheet. They continue providing income. That's an option. But we believe that it makes definitely more sense for the bank being tactical and strategical. Nobody's going to sell this generating losses, but to try and search for options, non-refinancing, or to sell them to other markets because you obtain a benefit, which of course you have resources at a human level, management level on behalf of the bank that can be focused on obtaining key assets for the bank, and you free at a liquidity and capital level of the bank. You recycle that capital and it can be refocused in the core business of the bank. And lastly, up above in the darker box, the assets that nobody shall discuss about that need to be transferred to the bad bank. They're non-strategic assets, non-performing, and facing many issues. And this is relatively simple to see from a concept level. in reality, what usually happens here in the center part, we didn't draw anything. You usually find a sort of a gray circle, which are the doubtful cases. Here we're talking about grays, blanks, and whites are easy to define, but this is an exercise that has to be done periodically. For example, commercial banks are doing so, and all public banks as well, but they have to be revisited every 6 months or based on the sequence that's determined. It's a process that the bank needs to do and see how they are refocusing. And then the bad bank, from an operational standpoint, has four large initiatives that they have to manage. First, how will they manage their portfolio? It means that they have to classify their loans. It's not the same thing, you know, loans to small, mid companies or large corporations. It's not the same thing, mortgage loans than consumption loans. So what they need to do is to separate and classify them, and they have to fix their credit policies. Credit policies of the good bank won't solve, because it's that policy. In other words, you manage things under normal circumstances. In a critical situation, it won't serve any purpose. And if you're going to use the same credit policies with which you provided a loan, well, you're going to end up under the same situation. To insist once again in the allocation of resources, setting the right capital structure, we have to determine what this bad bank will have, how much equity, how much debt. If they have a weak equity structure, well, it's going to complicate the carrying out of sales of assets at market prices, because it's going to generate losses. It's going to erode the foundations of equity of that bad bank. And it's clear, you know, the search of strategic partners. There are investors that are specialized in NPLs, which of course have permanent funds and which have much knowledge concerning these assets, and contribute two things to the bank. They contribute management, knowledge, and cap and equity, which is important, of course. And finally, the bad bank continues being a business. It's a business, in other words. So we have to define targets and priorities. This means that they need a business plan with a time horizon and with recovery targets and return rates for investors, because it's still a business, and these strategic investors are not part of the equity of a bad bank that we shall see. They gain money, and much money, by the way. So with this, we have concluded the first part. We're somewhat out of time, but it's important to provide examples of the situations we've gone through in the past. First of all, we have the situation of the public banks. We have today the case of NAMA. It's the public case of Ireland. NAMA means the National Asset Management Agency. And then we have Sareb, which is the Spanish bank, the assets for a banking restructuring. This is what it means by its acronym in Spanish. They're quite similar because of the financial crisis in 2009. The case of Ireland, they were quite quick because the Irish financial system was broke back in 2009, and they were rescued by the EU. It had to be done very quickly, and 80-90% of the financial system had been affected. Now, in the case of Spain, Sareb remained with the assets of the Spanish institution. They were a financial institution, not banks. And more or less, they represented 45% of the financial system. And this was later in 2012, because Spain, during 3 years, they tried to withstand those circumstances, the refinancing, until the situation truly became complicated. Now, in terms of equity, these are similar. Project 90% debt, 10% equity. But the result until here is similar, but the result, and I'm going to switch and go on to the final results, which was quite different. In the case of NAMA, we might say that it's been a success. They had 74 billion assets transferred once to gross value with a discount of 75%. And at present, they have converted in liquidity 55 million of that amount. In other words, 60%. Their business plan determined or estimated that they would gain throughout the lifespan of the bank 1 billion. And it's been more. And all the financing of the debt that they had obtained on the market has been repaid completely. Now, in the case of Sareb, unfortunately, it's completely different. The business plan was an optimistic one, very optimistic, that estimated if they're going to obtain a return of a 15% on their investment. And reality was that they've only accumulated losses. Back in 2019, they lost 1 billion of euros. And the FROB, which is the restructuring fund, which is the Spanish vehicle that has a 45% of Sareb, what it's done last year is basically provisioned a loss of 100% on their equity. So you might ask yourselves, if they're so similar and they created for the same purpose, why the results have been so different? Well, there are two factors. One, the business plans were completely different. One was a very conservative business plans, which allowed the NAMA people to carry out market operations. And in the case of Sareb, it's definitely more conditioned because of policies. So it was an optimistic business plan. But the key is the value under which assets were transferred to NAMA in comparison to Sareb. NAMA received loans with guarantees, appraisals to September 2009, and they were done with a discount of a 57%. And in the case of Sareb, the historic values in those institutions, although discounts were applied, which were interesting, of 63% of the value of mortgage loans and others, because the starting point was definitely higher. Well, the effective discounts were definitely lower. So that made them going through great difficulties when selling those assets. And there's also a level of asset category. NAMA had only loans and Sareb had real estate assets, you know, more than 2,000 assets, and it complicated management. And lastly, let's go on to the case of the Mellon Bank. It's a curious case because it's one of the with the greatest seniority in the United States, founded in 1860, so it had over 100 years when the crisis they faced the crisis. It was a regional bank. You must have heard the law of 1929 in the United States. It didn't allow graded national banks, and the banks in the U.S. were regional. It was the 15th largest bank in the USA. It was focused on real estate, businesses, energy, and in emerging countries or developing countries with high yield levels. And at the end of 86 and 87, there was a crisis, and it registers losses of over $1 billion in one quarter, which, taking into account the size of the bank back then, it was very important. And it had a deficit of 500 million equity amount. And the bank administration decided, a quick one, by the way, a drastic one, it decided to fire the general director back then. It hires a new general director, which came from the banking sector. He had worked in the California banks. His name was Cahoot. He had great experience in restructuring banks. So this gentleman becomes part of the bank, and he carries out a quick diagnosis of the three main initiatives that the bank needs to carry out if it wishes to survive. And also, those principal or main initiatives, he reaches the conclusion that they have to be done in parallel, and he can't do it in a sequencing manner because he has no time. So the first diagnostic says, which will be the team? He interviews the risk director and the operations director, and he reaches the conclusion that those that had been part of the problem will not be part of the solution, and they're substituted by people with which he had already known or worked with in restructuring surroundings. So he changes the first senior level of executives. So the axis of his action lines are simple and in turn quite complicated to execute. First of all, he needs to stabilize the bank concerning the 1 billion loss as well, the bank would not sustain. So he has to refocus the strategy of the bank. And we'll talk about this later on. What is the Mellon Bank at present? But the loan business, he reaches the conclusion that it needs to be reduced in the weight of the business plan. And thirdly, and in a crucial manner, well, he has to recapitalize the market. So how does he do so? In a simple but original manner back then. They create a bad bank. They give it a different name. We were talking about the Mellon Bank, and it's called the Grand Street National Bank, with which, of course, it's part of the Mellon Bank. They transfer 1 billion of NPLs, and what they do, they obtain equity for the bank and they issue debt. And the investors, asset investors, are the same investors of Mellon Bank, but through another vehicle, which is, of course, consolidated. They obtained $525 million, which was sufficient to cover the $500 million of deficit. And they create an incentive plan of the director of the management for that bad bank. And awarding and giving incentives based on compliance and return obtained with that bank. And that bad bank is used as a vehicle to manage the Mellon's portfolio and assets that had been conveyed, and it's used as a platform through a service agreement. In other words, they pay a fee for the managed assets. So what is the result? The result, I would say, that it's spectacular. In a year, they were capable of recovering normal activities of the Mellon Bank. They paid, basically, they paid off all the debt, and the return to shareholders, the ones that had invested in the bad bank, well, it was a higher, it was an astonishing 21.3%. It's not a bad result in comparison to the situation a year before. Hence, the main lessons learned of this is that, first of all, the team is important. If they had had another general manager, the prior general manager, well, maybe the result would have been different. And secondly, that sometimes, you know, these crises have to be seen as an opportunity. The Mellon Bank had a history of 120 years, and thereafter it merged with the New York Bank that had been created by Alexander Hamilton in 1880, one of the founding fathers of the US. And the merger of Mellon and the New York is a bank that capitalizes over $36 billion of market cap. And of course, they changed their business completely. They stopped being a bank for loans, and it's National Bank of the US, and they're one of the main trust fund managers and investment funds managers. And the last slide, where we wish to summarize the key messages concerning today's session. First of all, see lessons learned. First of all, how do you have to face these issues? They have to be faced urgently. If the banks think that it's not urgent and they do it slowly, well, the issues will continue being there, and they might face that losses will be accumulated. And bigger the snowball, more difficult to solve the situation, greater equity, greater effort, greater resources. Secondly, and this concept, we have underscored it on different occasions, today is the clear separation between one balance sheet and the other, and responsibility concerning the management of a good bank and a bad bank. That has to be clear so as to be able to be successful. Now, the third factor, we have to carry out drastic measures. I believe that nobody likes them. They're not nice. Sometimes you have to restructure teams, clear business lines, you lose customers, but they're crucial. If we don't carry out that type of surgery and we amputate a hand or a finger, well, we might face circumstances in which we might place in danger the whole organization. So let's have no doubts. We should not wiggle when doing it. And this makes, therefore, the business plans to be realistic ones. If they're not realistic ones, and we've seen this in the Sareb's case, they had an optimistic plan. Well, it'll make you not being able to sell your assets at market prices. You continue accumulating, you sell the best assets without obtaining the result you wished. And what this does, you remove or you leave the milk out of the coffee, and you will definitely have all the losses and the worst assets in your portfolio. So that makes us look into realistic transfer values. If we, for example, we transfer the accounting value of the balance of the good to the bad bank, well, the only thing we're doing is moving the asset from one location to another. And the bad bank will definitely face the same difficulties or will face the same challenges as the good bank, so as to be able to optimize the results of the transfer of those values. And in conclusion, the key is also to find the right staff. They have to be people that have a specific knowledge of all the processes that I have described priorly, but they have to be people that have the experience and have to be plug and play. If not, we're going to face with situations under which, of course, we're going to create the team. And until they believe doing things properly, a year and a half has gone by. And this factor, which is the quick reaction factor, we're going to lose it. And time is crucial. It's gold in these types of processes. Well, having said this, we have finished with our presentation. Pascual, I know that they're asking questions whilst we are talking. We've gone beyond the allotted time, but of course, we're happy to be able to answer any questions or doubts. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. We invite you all to send your questions on the icon down below of your screen. It says questions and answers. No questions for the time being. While we wait for a question, it's interesting, this difference between the success amongst the bad Irish bank, NAMA, in comparison to Sareb. And you said, you were talking about the difference, which was the valuation of assets when they were transferred. And of course, you know, there were different characteristics. NAMA only loans, and the other had real estate loans. What do you recommend? In other words, when you transfer assets from a bad bank, also to transfer real estate assets, which are the ones that, you know, it requires a different administration, of course. You know, they need different capabilities because Sareb at present in Spain, it's become one of the biggest real estate companies in the country because they manage, it can't be exhaustive. We have little time. It manages over 200 real estate units throughout Spain. Maybe it's the biggest one in the country. So this means that you need external aid, services, real estate agents at regional, local level. In other words, you become a manager of assets. You have to pay for maintenance, repairs, and municipal taxes, and so on and so forth. And in the case of NAMA, it was quite simple. Ireland, from a geographic standpoint, it's smaller than Spain. Thus, the business or the loans were concentrated in Dublin, Belfast, and London. In the case of Spain, you know, the origin of the assets come from the Real Cajas, which are regional ones in Catalonia, in Galicia, and the north of Spain. So each one was concentrated in their specific regions of influence. And at present, Sareb has assets throughout the country. But to answer your question, it's definitely more simple and simpler to transfer the loans and assets have specific vehicles and to create these services, which might be a real estate service, which will manage those assets and the selling of those assets and maintenance, of course. The first question is, what has been the funding of bad banks? It should be complex to obtain resources for the management of loans with, if they're NPLs. Well, I would distinguish two cases, the bad or good banks, the public bad banks. Well, you need political will. In the case of NAMA, like in the case of Sareb, it was initiatives managed by each one of the local governments and negotiated with the EU and with the Central European Bank. That's how they obtained the funds. And the emissions of debt transfers, of course, they're having collateral, and everybody knew that they loan to NAMA Sareb. If they don't pay, well, the governments ended paying up. That's for bad public banks, which in Latin America and the region, you know, things are more complex to obtain. In other words, you need the political will to do so. Now, bad private banks, I would say that it's more of a private market. Public debt emissions can take place, but usually what is done, you look for private investors. There are multiple funds, for example, Herber, Forbes, Oaktree, all the ones that sound like this. Well, that's what they do. They are the so-called Whitley funds. They carry out their function, and what they do is participate and contribute with capital to those vehicles. But what happens, you need a proposal which makes sense. In other words, what the good bank cannot do is to transfer the assets at an accounting level. It has to carry out a series of discounts so as to have an attractive investment to obtain this this equity. But with the proper structure and environment, it's a very liquid market. 3-4 months ago, Oaktree obtained $15 billion from investors, from Elvis, to invest at a world level in NPL funds. I was talking at $15 billion of Oaktree, but now at present, maybe in the market, they're obtaining $200 billion at a world level to invest in these types of assets. So, you know, obtaining funds won't be an issue. Next question, how does the situation of a bad bank, talking about technology and technological projects? Part of the IT systems might be inherited. In other words, accounting, calculation of interests, collection, and so on and so forth. And the generation of course, balance can be aggregated by the good bank. What happens, we have to develop IT projects. If you remain with the real estate assets, well, you need to develop a module concerning the management of the real estate asset and of the legal processes and so on and so forth. These are not especially expensive. The most important thing is to clearly understand how do you wish designing and the purpose of that system. And many servicers are doing it in-house, or they purchase a platform that exists in the market. It's not a large investment in terms of time, neither money, but it demands clearly understanding what you need it for. Because, you know, like with the IT systems, garbage in and out. If you design it incorrectly, it won't work to manage your business. How do you define the proper human capital for a bad bank? It depends, therefore, on the value of the transfer of assets, because, you know, they're communicating vessels. But public banks, we've seen 10% of equity and 90% debt, because the debt had a small trick. It was guaranteed. But in a bad private bank, well, the levels of capitalization have to be higher, probably 20-25% of equity. But, you know, it's much conditioned with the value of the transfer of the assets, because the assets transferred, if the value are adjusted, well, your capital will be less for management purposes. You won't have losses. On the contrary, benefits. These are communicating vessels. So we have to look into each one of the cases of the structure, but the structure will be determined by the quality of the assets that are being transferred and the value of those assets. What's the profile of the IT people or staff to interact properly with the bad bank? I would say it's not a specific profile because the IT people in the end adapt to the maintenance in the system. I believe that there's no specific profile. What's different is the profile of the managers of the bad bank. They have to have great knowledge from a legal standpoint of the mercantile law of each one of the countries and broad knowledge concerning real estate management of assets and negotiation capability concerning loans and restructuring capabilities of credit capabilities. The following question: what is the role of the banking regulator in the creation of the bad bank? If you choose the option of a banking asset, well, you have to comply with all the regulations of that bank, considering that their activities will be more limited. They won't have an office, they won't provide new loans, with the exception of those that you're refinancing for the existing operations, no deposits. So I think it's, I'm talking about the option of the banking one, because if you won't, of that worksheet or token. So I believe that it's the same one complying with the rules and regulations. The operational one will definitely be more simpler. Why? Because there are a series of services which will not be provided by this bank. So the next one. Might you remark briefly on how did you, the Mellon Bad Bank, leave those difficult circumstances or deficit? Okay, the exit. No, the deficit, the bad bank that was created with Mellon, for example, to leave or avoid deficit. Well, the key issue was the value of the assets that had been transferred, because they had transferred 1 billion in assets, but they paid 525. So what they did was to negotiate all the loans. The assets that could be sold at attractive prices, they were sold quickly. And what they did was generate liquidity. In other words, there are no magical formulae. This is not the miracle of, you know, of a deficit that's converted into two, but what allows you to restructure in the proper focus, because the management of the bank was only focusing on selling and the generation of liquidity of those assets. However, if you mix both, management's, you know, it's mixed. On the one hand side, you're delivering new loans, and on the other, you're managing the other loans. So the key was to focus clearly at realistic transfer prices of assets of the good bank to the bad bank. The bad bank, I apologize. In this case, how do you define the capital or equity that needs to be contributed? We couldn't hear the first part of the question. I apologize. It was simple and complicated. It depends on the volume of assets that are being transferred, and a fair market value should carry out of the transfer assets. It's not the same thing transferring of an asset, a good asset, to a deteriorated one. The nominal value is the same, but the net recovery value is different. Thus, based on the net value, the reasonable for recovery purposes, and what they had to do is to use a third party, an impartial one, that would carry out that valuation based on the participation of what is contributed. You establish the equity in that asset or vehicle. Now, during the beginning of the presentation, you spoke of government support for the recovery. Are you referring specifically to salvage a bank? What other expectation concerning the role of the banks under crises? Yes, it might be a rescue plan of a bank or be a part of the portfolio of the bank. But in the end, there are different institutions that are there to preserve the solvency of the financial system, and its job is to rescue the clients and to give back with the control of the assets, and then they manage it. That's the extreme situation. Here, what we had described is an intermediate situation where a bank with a certain level of aid with a part of its portfolio on behalf of the government, of course, continues being feasible. So what it does, they are given a guarantee to cover the losses with a certain type of assets. That's the situation we described. The other is an extreme situation where basically the bank is purchased by the public rescue entity with whatever name in each one of the countries, it's managed and thereafter it's privatized and sold thereafter. The next question, might you repeat the intuition behind a special purpose entity and the bad bank, the creation of a bad bank? Yes, of course. Okay, surely you're seeing the slide. Both have off-balance treatment, which is what we see, off-balance treatment. The difference is that the bad bank is managed with a bank token and the special purpose entity is an ad hoc entity, which doesn't require a bank token and in which you create a sister company where the good bank contributes with a series of assets and controls part of the equity, and there are investors that contribute with the rest of the equity or capital and with the majority percentage to obtain accounting deconsolidation under international rules and regulation, IFRS, to be able to deconsolidate that vehicle. In reality, it's a technical issue. What happens with the bank token? It's subject to the regulator. It depends on the case and depending on what is needed by this investor. What is the expected yield from investors that allot resources concerning non-performing loans? Each one has their levels, but those are returns of high private equity. This means over 20%. Like in everything, you know, it's a risky business. Thus, they are searching for high return levels. And they're never going to tell us because, or you're in the fund, or it's very difficult to understand how much they've gained in the end because the return is seen at the end of the process. But I would say 20-25% at least. That's what they're looking for. Because it's a risky business to gain an 8-10%, well, they would do other different types of businesses. Might it be recommendable that if there's liquidity needs, these might be provided by the governmental authorities? Yes, of course. And under these situations, all aid or all rescue plan, in the end, let's not lose focus. This is done by the banks to improve the balance sheets and to continue with their business. And from a government authority, what is needed to leave a crisis is a sound financial system. If the banks have face insolvency issues, they're going to stop loaning to the good clients. It's what we said from the start. What the banks wish to do is to reuse capital to reinvest it in this quadrant. Of course, it would be of great aid. As a matter of fact, allow me to add that some central banks, well, they've been revising that the central bank will be able to act as a lender of last resort for banking resolutions. Of course, in Europe, the Central European Bank was the window. And all these issuance of bonuses that weren't liquid, well, they could be discounted. The overnight bank presented those bonuses or shares and obtained liquidity. Hence, many of them stopped going to the interbanking system for months. And then they're returned to restore the interbanking system. But You know, it's one of the most powerful tools from the central bank so as to be able to preserve liquidity and to avoid panic amongst the banks, as they're called. Next question, which should be the period of time, a reasonable duration of a bad bank? In Mexico, the bad bank is around for many legal issues, and they are around for many years. I do agree with the remark. Additionally, for example, the Irish bad bank, the plan was a 10-year plan, and the Spanish one as well. Because, you know, to say for 15 years, it sounded bad. Now, a private one, I would say it's different. For example, a private bank, well, you can think about 3-4 years. If there's an asset remnant with issues, well, you end up isolating it and you sell it with a liquidation price. But, you know, the legal process conditions things, the public bank that says it's going to be done in 5 years, I don't know. I believe it should be thought, you should think 10 years, depending on the experience of the countries. Between 12, 15 years, you're going to continue with legal issues, but that should be the lesser part of your portfolio. That's why it's important, the reaction, I think he said. I didn't said that, say this before. In the case of NAMA, something they did, they applied discounts when the documentation of the mortgages hadn't been properly presented. And then in the case of Sareb, they didn't do so. So what happened is that Sareb realized that they have many mortgage loans and they're missing out on the original contract. And under the Mexican law or Spanish law and throughout the continent from the Napoleonic Code, it's an issue not to have the original contract. Which were the factors that contributed to the generation of liquidation in the Irish bank throughout the years? The market situation was one of those factors, yes, but especially from the first year they were already selling assets. They faced a harsh situation. They started selling from the start because the discounts allowed them to match the offer, the supply and demand. So they began generating liquidity in Sareb. What they did was to organize themselves. It's like a very complex structure. And at Sareb, they have different regions from a geographical standpoint. And what Sareb did, they began selling the best assets, applying greater discounts than reasonable, so as to be able to comply with the business plan, which was so ambitious. So what's happened at present, Sareb has sold less than 40% of assets and NAMA 60%. And Sareb has the worst assets to manage. Of course, they're changing the complete business plan, and the business plan definitely is more conservative at present. Another question, would is the participation of the board with of the bad bank, do they control? If you wish to unconsolidate it, no, because they do not have economic majority. Other thing is that we have to be careful, like in everything, under the FRRS regulations, if you handle 50%, you do not consolidate, but if you have political control, well, you have an effective control and they continue consolidating. What we usually do is that the good bank has a capital minority. They name part of the board of administration and they have a control concerning the management of the bank. And what they do, they reach an agreement on a sharing system of incentives concerning the benefits obtained for the carrying out of the business plan of the bad bank or the surplus value that might be obtained, because sometimes management is great and there is a surplus in value. For that surplus to be in the hands of the investor in the bad bank, what we articulate are mechanisms in which you share that extra benefit. But we have to be careful in how this is presented. If not, the auditor might say that there has to be an effective control and they will continue consolidating it. As part of the requirements and expectations from authorities, you have to verify that banks have the capability to be able to manage the assets in a timely manner in a short period of time. Have you found recommendations to check for that the banks have these capabilities through simulation in which staff from the bank participates? These liabilities are fall in specific staff from the bank? Yes. Well, there are two spheres for these matters. One are the regulatory requirements that all financial institutions have, where, of course, there are inspections or audits on behalf of the supervisors. In Spain, it's the Bank of Spain that carries out planned audits and some exceptional ones. And the second thing, which is the most important one, they have to be part of those loan policies that we said that the bad bank had to create. So we have to determine that the taxation every 3-4 months, the appraisals, have to be updated. In other words, to have a new appraisal every 6 months. And every 3 months, what we ask the appraisal is a confirmation that the prior appraisal within a range, I believe, must plus less 5% continued being right. If the conclusion was different, well, they had to carry out another appraisal. What this demands at a system level, what we mentioned before, was to generate a specific module for appraisals in which you might deposit that information, easy to have access to generate an alarm system, and also to draft contracts with third parties. Sometimes you hire 3 different firms for diversification purposes. And that's part of these additional processes that we were talking about that generate complexity. That's the complexity. And here on the chart, you can see the collateral, which generates all this right-hand side part, you know, the real estate appraisal and so on and so forth. It's definitely more intensive and in detail than what it was before. The return rate that a bad bank has as a goal in mind. If it's an investor, a specialized one, I would say, you know, one thing is what they say during the negotiation. You know, slogan is a 12%, but they aspire to a 20, 22%. Another thing is a public bank. A public bank cannot say, because of a reputational issue, that they aspire to gain a 20%. They talk about an 8-10% or a reasonable profitability, but let's not feel deceived. One thing is what is said, that you say mouth outwards or from a political standpoint is necessary to transmit. And another thing is that the bank internally needs to have the target in mind to gain money, because if you play to match, you're going to lose money, surely. If you play to gain money, surely you gain something, or it's going to be a match, depending on the nature of the bank. But we always need non-reachable targets, but ambitious targets. What strategy was implemented by Mellon to win over the trust of the public so as to invest in that bank, keeping in mind that they were the owners? No shareholders, but not the same board of directors. They changed the team, the discourse, and when, you know, they looked for capital, you know, the person was different. There are interviews of this gentleman, Mr. Cahoot, that talked about it. It was like a testimonial that his greatest difficulty was to go back to restore trust. And the interviewer asked him, did you achieve that? Well, sometimes yes and no. Nobody will look at you and say, hey, you're the new advisor. I've forgotten about everything before and I trust you. No, that won't happen. But trust is recovered, changing the strategic plan and saying what you do and complying with what you're saying. You know, he was saying a really interesting interview you know, they're Americans. They say, well, people began working at 7 a.m. and we begin working at 6 a.m. So they generated an internal dynamic, a different one. And that immediately, you know, besides the business plan that they had presented, the numbers and so on and so forth, the key was recover credibility. And credibility is with a new strategy and delivering that strategy. There's no secrecy about it. What recommendations exist for securitization of a regulated bank, you know, a bank that's lost its license to do that for a bank? Well, I'm not an expert concerning that aspect, but I do. Is the bank that has lost the license and assets, if they're transferred into another vehicle and it complies with criteria. Well, the other thing is the entity that has lost the bank token. You need to create a specific vehicle and to transfer the assets. Well, you won't be able to transfer all that because you're going to miss out on the objective. You have to select cherry picking of the best assets. And of course, that you'll reach. And we have to look at the structures and conditions of each one of the countries. But yes, conceptually, I see not a great issue. Measures to dilute in the good bank, the losses from the transfers from the bad bank. You know, mathematics is harsh. So the good bank is withstand and not acknowledge the loss. So they're self-deceiving themselves. They might try to defer it through time. In other words, to recognize it progressively, or they might carry out a realistic exercise. So what they need to do is capitalize in the proper manner. Of course, with new equity or the conditional convertibles or contingent capital that might help out to cover those deficits. But generally speaking, I believe that we have to be realistic on behalf of debtors and banks. One might spend much time denying, and it's human, of course, everybody goes through that. But as soon as you leave that and you consider realistic measures and you capitalize, well, you'll be able to return to your normal activities. Because if you search for financial figures, but in practice might serve to comply from a regulatory standpoint that doesn't provide solvency for operational purposes, well, they're going to become what they call combi institutions. So the solution depends on the home office, the support from supervisors or from government entities. But the recommendation is to carry out a realistic exercise to transfer assets to the reasonable market value and to recapitalize the good bank. It's isolated. It has no bad assets. And things will be different. So the market will judge you based on a recovery scenario, and you won't continue to transmitting or contaminating your balance with those inherited assets or NPLs, which are the ones that will be transferred to the bad bank. Because the bad bank can last many years, how would that affect the technological projects? If the bad bank is around for long, there's a restriction in technology and IT will be obsolete. The good thing about separation is that technological projects of the good bank, I do understand it's aligned with the following. Okay, you invest in apps, you invest in these systems. Well, all this issue of the relationship with the system are changed. If it's like an internal unit, it might generate and condition. If you separate it and you create a different institution, the bad bank, needs an initial investment concerning systems, IT systems, but once they're already there, it's A, B, or C. In other words, you're going to have a flow concerning loan management, tax appraisals, and management of assets and legal flow, but that won't change so much. As a matter of fact, from a concept level, let's talk about Bank Mala 86, 87, you know, 35, 40 years have gone by, and technology and the way in which things are done hasn't changed much. If you separate what it allows the good bank is to creating these subsystems and continue investing in their IT. So that's one of the virtue of the separations. Because of time constraints, this is the last question. In a special purpose entity, how do you maintain individual follow-up of debtors from a supervision standpoint so as to understand the complete relationship with the vehicle? Well, one thing information requirements from the regulator, but from the vehicle standpoint, they have full control of all loans. As a matter of fact, if they don't have it, I don't know how they're doing their business. Hence, depending on the agreement regulations of each one of the countries, well, that information is available. You can have access. Another thing is the proprietary entity of the SBB to be able to share it with the regulator. Generally speaking, these private investors are quite jealous of sharing that information because basically, you know, it's the secret formula of Coke. Of course, they don't wish to show what they have there, but information is there. And if you reach an agreement with the bank, I believe, might provide that info. Although they are retailers, they will be part of the board of administrator and detailed information of their portfolio will be in their hands. And I'm sorry, I can't continue answering. I don't know the details of each one of the countries, if they're obliged or not to provide those details. Yes, let's carry out a research, but the information exists. With no further ado, thank you so much, Argos, for your time, this magnificent presentation. Of course, there are questions that reached us through the chat, but we shall try and answer them in writing. And having said this, our session has ended. Thank you all for your presentation, especially Argos. Thank you, sir. Thank you, ASPA, for this invitation and the trust in us, and to all participants for your interest and the number and the quality of the questions, which have been extremely good. Thank you for this open dialogue with you.